Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Okay, so picture this. You're jumping into a custom-built camper truck.
Right.
Got a standard poodle sitting next to you.
Charlie. Can't forget Charlie.
Definitely not Charlie. And you're off on this, like, epic road trip.
Yeah.
10,000 miles across America, back in 1960.
1960, yeah. The book itself, Travels with Charlie, In Search of America, came out in 62.
So welcome, everyone. We're doing a deep dive today into this, well, it's a really essential piece of American nonfiction by John Steinbeck.
It really is. And the whole premise, the role of this trip for Steinbeck is just fascinating. He'd spent his life writing about America, but he felt totally disconnected.
Like he didn't know it anymore.
Exactly. So the mission, the goal, was pretty straightforward, but huge. Find out, what are Americans like today? Go see for himself beyond the, you know, the official stories.
And what's kind of striking is just how much that still resonates, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
He was wrestling with things we talk about constantly now. This tension between, like, a romantic idea of the past and this rapidly changing modern reality.
And the beginning of homogenization, right? Losing regional flavor. That anxiety about identity in the face of mass culture. It feels very, very current, especially in our, you know, information age.
It really does.
Oh.
So before we get into the trip itself, let's talk about Steinbeck for a minute. Because his perspective is, well, it's everything here.
Yeah, absolutely. When John Steinbeck set off in 1960, he wasn't just, you know, some author. He was a giant.
Right. We're talking The Grapes of Wrath, Pulitzer Prize,
yeah.
Back in 39.
A literary titan. And think about this. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature the same year this book, Travels with Charlie, was published, 1962.
Wow. Okay, so he has this immense authority, this established voice.
Definitely. And he was known fundamentally as the voice of the American working class, the disenfranchised, people connected to the land. Think about his roots in Salinas Valley, California.
So his viewpoint wasn't academic, it was grounded.
Deeply grounded, rooted in empathy. And that's why Travels with Charlie feels different from just, say, reporting. He felt he'd lost touch with the very soul of the country that fueled his entire life's work.
So the role of the book is almost like a personal pilgrimage for him.
I think that's a perfect way to put it. A spiritual checkup, maybe. He's using his incredible observational skills, honed over decades, but this time it's personal. He needs to know. And that turns this travelogue into some pretty profound social commentary.
Okay, let's get into the journey itself. The logistics are kind of wild.
Yeah. 3 months on the road.
10,000 miles.
Yeah.
Just him and his standard poodle, Charlie.
In a custom truck, no less.
Right. Named Rocinante.
After Don Quixote's horse, which tells you a lot right there, doesn't it?
It totally does. It
yeah.
signals this is maybe a romantic quest, maybe a bit idealistic, and a bit tilting at windmills to find the real America.
I think that's exactly the suggestion. He wasn't looking for an easy ride. In fact, the goal was the opposite.
He deliberately tried to make it harder, right? Avoid the new superhighways.
Absolutely. Stay off the fast track. The goal was to meander, to take the back roads,
yeah.
to actually stop.
And listen.
Listen. In diners, gas stations, little local stores, talk to whoever he met.
So the problem he was tackling head on was this gap, this growing gap between the America people thought existed, maybe the romanticized version.
Yeah, the postcard version.
And the reality of the early 1960s, which was modernizing fast, getting more standardized, and pretty turbulent underneath.
Exactly. So the book becomes this blend. You get these beautiful, vivid descriptions of the landscapes,
mm-hmm.
but you also get his philosophical thoughts, his musings, and then these really sharp critiques of what he's seeing.
Who's this book really for then? Is it just for Steinbeck fans?
Oh, I think it's much broader. Anyone interested in American identity, certainly, but also anyone thinking about, well, cultural change, information overload, that loss of local character, themes that are arguably even more intense today.
It feels like he's setting up a model for how to actually see a place, not just pass through it.
Precisely. And the emotional journey he takes is key. It starts with curiosity, this sort of wanderlust.
That deep-seated itch he talks about.
Yeah, that itch, feeling like an outlander in his own country. He starts out from Long Island.
And Charlie the Poodle's there from the get-go, more than just a pet, right?
Oh, Charlie is crucial. Steinbeck calls him his confidant, his companion, but also his ambassador.
Ambassador. How so?
Well, think about it. You've got this famous older writer rolling into a small town alone in a big truck. People might be wary, right? Put their guard up.
Yeah, I could see that.
But show up with a big, friendly, well-behaved standard poodle.
Instant icebreaker.
Totally. Charlie opens doors, he gets people talking naturally, gets past the suspicion. Steinbeck needed those genuine interactions, and Charlie helped make them happen.
So, first leg, the East Coast, New England. What's he finding there?
He finds, you know, kindness, encounters with these sort of reserved, taciturn locals, good people.
But he's already seen signs of change.
Right away. Those early warnings about standardization, he starts noticing how radio and especially the growing influence of television are kind of smoothing things out.
Like regional accents, local ways of talking.
Exactly. Accents fading, local customs getting blurred. He sees the beginning of this cultural erosion driven by mass media. The unique edges are starting to get sanded down.
And that worry about sameness that kind of escalates as he heads west, right?
Yeah.
He's pretty critical of the new interstate highways.
He does. It's not that he's necessarily against progress itself, I don't think. It's more about the cost of a certain kind of progress.
The efficiency costs.
Yeah. The superhighways are fast. They're efficient. But he feels they create this sterile corridor. The towns along them start to look and feel the same. You're moving through the country, but the highway itself prevents you from actually seeing it, from connecting with it.
And that disconnect breeds loneliness.
Definitely. That theme of loneliness gets stronger. You feel it in his writing. He's on this grand mission, but he's often profoundly alone in Rocinante.
Is there a specific moment where that really hits home?
Yeah, there's a really poignant bit where he ends up spending Thanksgiving completely alone in a motel room somewhere near Chicago.
Oh, wow.
It's just this moment of deep melancholy. The big search for America suddenly feels very small and solitary.
It's rough. Does the mood lift?
It does, thankfully. Mm. When he gets further west, particularly into what he calls the lyrical west, the landscape itself seems to revive him.
Oh, wide open spaces.
Yes, Montana, the Badlands. He writes with such awe about the sheer scale and beauty of the American wilderness. It's like nature offers this sense of permanence, this grandeur that pushes back against the, you know, the conformity and the rush he felt back east.
So the land itself becomes an antidote.
Sort of, yeah. It provides solace, perspective. His writing about the West is incredibly powerful, but even that beauty leads to a more complex, maybe bittersweet moment when he gets back to California.
The homecoming.
The homecoming. First, this almost spiritual experience with the giant redwood trees. He sees them as these ancient symbols of endurance, standing against all the frantic change.
A sense of permanence again.
Exactly. But then he gets back to Salinas, the heart of Steinbeck country. His home turf.
It is not what he expected.
Not at all. He finds he's basically a stranger. The places have changed, developed. The people he knew are gone or don't recognize him, or the connections are just different. He has this really painful realization that you can't go home again.
Oof. Because his memory of it, the romanticized past maybe, clashes with the present reality.
Precisely. The agricultural valley he knew is becoming suburbanized. His internal picture just doesn't match the external reality anymore. It's a deeply alienating moment for him.
So where does he go from that feeling of alienation?
Well, the journey continues. He heads east again through the Mojave into Texas. He makes observations about Texas, the hospitality, the sort of unique Texan bravado. He sees it almost as its own country within the country.
Still part of that American paradox he's finding everywhere.
Right. But then the tone, the whole purpose of the trip, takes a really sharp, dark turn when he reaches the Deep South.
New Orleans.
And he arrives right in the middle of the school integration crisis. This is where the journey shifts from observation, even critical observation, to direct, unavoidable moral confrontation.
This is the part about the cheerleaders, isn't it?
Yes. And he doesn't flinch. He gives this raw, incredibly disturbing account of watching these white women gather every single day outside of school
to scream racist abuse
at a 6-year-old black child, Ruby Bridges, just for going to school. It's brutal to read.
You can feel his revulsion in the text, can't you?
Oh, completely. He describes the hatred almost like a physical illness, a sickness he can feel. It shakes him to his core. This scene becomes, in many ways, the grim climax of the journey.
Because it's such a stark contrast to the American ideal he was maybe hoping to find.
It's the ultimate failure of that ideal right there in front of him. It shatters any simple notion of what America is. He went looking for America, singular, and found. America's plural, contradictory, complex, beautiful, and sometimes deeply, deeply ugly.
So the journey doesn't really end with a neat answer.
Not at all. It ends more somberly. With the understanding that maybe the search itself, the grappling with these contradictions, is the whole point. It's an essential task, and it's never really finished.
Okay, so pulling back from the journey itself, what are the big themes, the core messages we should take away from Travels with Charlie, especially thinking about today?
Well, the first one is impossible to miss: homogenization versus authenticity. That interstate mind he worried about.
Right. Mass media, chain stores, everything's starting to look the same.
Exactly. It forces you to ask, you know, in our hyper-connected world with global brands and instant everything, are we losing touch with what makes our own local places unique? Do we even notice?
That's a heavy question. What's next?
Tied into that is the paradox of American identity. Steinbeck didn't find one America. He found restlessness, constant change, deep contradictions.
North, south, east, west, urban, rural, all different.
All different, all part of the same messy whole. And the reflection there, I think, is that trying to find one simple definition of who we are, whether it's personally or as a nation, it's probably a fool's errand. We have to be okay with the complexity, the contradictions.
That feels very relevant. Okay, what else?
And then there's the idea of the subjectivity of truth and memory. Steinbeck himself acknowledged that this book is his version, his impression. It's not pure objective reporting. It's featured through his experiences, his moods, his memories.
So it reminds us that our own view is always, well, our view.
Exactly. Our perceptions shape our reality. We need to be aware of our own biases and the limits of our own perspective. It's a call for intellectual humility, maybe.
And the last one, stemming from that powerful New Orleans section.
The need for engagement. That confrontation with racial injustice wasn't just a side note. It felt like the defining challenge. The book implicitly argues that you can't just be a passive observer when faced with deep moral wrongs.
You have to bear witness.
Bear witness, engage, grapple with the uncomfortable truths, even when it's painful. Looking away isn't an option if you care about the ideals you claim to hold.
Wow. Those are some powerful takeaways. And Steinbeck had such a way with the words, too. There were some really memorable lines in the book.
Oh, definitely. He could capture a whole philosophy in a single sentence. Should we look at a few?
Let's do it. What's one that really captures his own spirit?
How about this one? I was born lost and take no pleasure in being found.
Okay, yeah. That sounds like him, the eternal wanderer.
Right. It's like, for him, the value is in the searching, the observing. Being found, being settled, would mean the end of discovery, which is what he lived for.
I like that. Yeah. What about one on the nature of travel itself?
This one always stuck with me. We find after years of struggle that we do not take a trip. A trip takes us.
Ah, so you can make all the plans you want.
But the journey itself changes you. It has its own momentum, its own lessons. You have to kind of surrender to it. It highlights that transformative power.
That links back to his critique of just speeding through things, like this quote about Rocinante.
Oh, yeah. A man in a car can't see anything, but a man in Rocinante can see a country.
It's such a great metaphor.
It really is. It's a knock against that high-speed efficiency that bypasses real experience. To truly understand something or some place, you need to slow down, look closely, engage, take the Rocinante approach, not the interstate approach.
Okay, one more, maybe something a bit more philosophical.
How about, what good is the warmth of summer without the cold of winter to give it sweetness?
Contrast brings appreciation.
Exactly. It's his philosophy of embracing the whole picture, the good and the bad, the easy and the difficult. You need the struggles, the contrast, the winter to truly appreciate the summer, the sweetness. The difficulties give life its texture, its meaning.
So Steinbeck gives us this amazing model with his trip. How can we, you know, regular people living busy lives today actually apply some of this?
Well, tip one is pretty direct. Step off the interstate. Metaphorically, and maybe literally sometimes.
Meaning, get off the beaten path in our own lives.
Yeah. Explore the back roads of your own community. Go to that local cafe you always drive past. Talk to people you wouldn't normally encounter. Listen, Steinbeck showed that real understanding often happens when you ditch efficiency for genuine connection.
Okay, I like that. What's tip two?
Critically question progress. Use Steinbeck's observational eye. When we embrace a new technology, a new convenience, a new efficient way of doing things, pause and ask, what are we losing?
Is there a local tradition, a face-to-face interaction, a unique community quirk that's disappearing because of this progress?
Exactly. Just because something is new or fast doesn't automatically make it better, especially if it contributes to that homogenization he worried about. Be mindful of the trade-offs.
Good point. And the last tip.
Embrace the journey philosophy. Remember his idea that a trip takes us. Apply that to any project, any goal, any learning process you're undertaking.
Focus less on just reaching the finish line.
Right. value the process itself, the learning, the mistakes, the unexpected discoveries, the personal growth that happens along the way, often that's the real reward, not just checking the box at the end. The transformation is the point.
That's a great way to think about things. So, reflecting on this whole dive, what was the most surprising thing for you, or what really stayed with you?
You know, what really stands out for me is the profound honesty about the contradictions. Steinbeck didn't try to smooth it all out or offer easy answers about America.
He just showed it all.
Yeah, the beauty and the ugliness, the kindness and the hatred, the connection and the alienation. My big takeaway is that any complex thing, a country, an idea, maybe even ourselves, isn't one single definable entity. It's an ongoing experiment full of paradox. And the only way to understand it is to keep engaging with it directly, honestly, even when it's uncomfortable. That search, that engagement is vital. It never ends.
For me, I keep coming back to Charlie. It sounds a bit funny. But the role of the poodle as this, like, social catalyst and maybe even a kind of moral anchor for Steinbeck on the road, it's really striking.
Like ultimate ambassador.
Exactly. Mm. It shows how sometimes the simplest connections, the most honest companions, can open up the most complex truths. It's a powerful reminder of the, well, the joy and sometimes the pain that comes with really trying to see the world around you. It's a testament to the power of discovery.
Well said.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.